With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Welcome. If you're looking for a story, a dose of the stranger than fiction side of the world we live in, then you've come to the right place. There are a lot of stories here to choose from, and today's is a new story that takes place in Egypt. We've all heard many great stories about Egypt, but one you may not have heard a lot about, or at all, is the Lost Labyrinth. It's a large sacred structure buried over time, one yet to be explored. What is really down there, and why are we called in to help? They call me the Ghost. I'm ex-CIA and now a dark operative on the dark web. Today is the story of mystery, lost souls, and a history still playing out in our world today. Take a listen and enjoy. This is part one of this job, the labyrinth. Make sure you listen to this part first, and then you can click into part two in the description below. Okay, so are any of you familiar with the labyrinth in Egypt? Let me tell you how I, and we the team, got involved. This job was more recent. I'm usually telling you guys jobs that were done a while before I'm sharing them with you, but ironically, this pandemic mess that we've all been in was the reason for the exact timing that we were pulled in. The request came in, and I can see that it's coming to me from a government organization in Egypt. Any requests that come in to me from a government organization or person, they know to tag their request as such. The legit people would know to do that. I'm not going to get into exactly who they are, but this is an agency, an organization, that works to protect Egyptian history. So all good there. But why are they contacting me? Well, in the request, they tell me that they are in need of a rescue, the kind of which they're not sure I've worked before, but one that they have all confidence I can help with. The gentleman tells me that this rescue is crucial to mankind and its history, as well as its future, particularly in Egypt, things they hold most dear. Their response to the dilemma comes out of respect to what's taken place before them and their loyalty to maintaining the sense of who they are into the future. This man, who I'll call Beniti Kamal, tells me that he would like to meet with me immediately. He also tells me that he wanted to waste no time and has already made his way to the United States, and says that he's waiting, and hiding in a way, in a small town in Florida. He can either come to me or I can go to him, but he'd like to meet with me as soon as possible. I know who this person is, and I know of his organization. I know that he is legit. Immediately, this request was of great interest to me, and I was eager to meet with him, and I actually made my way to Florida that same day. Because of who this person is, and to discuss this all with him in private, out of respect, I go alone. Beniti has money, and he's staying at a residence on a large canal lot, with privacy and space, a pool, the works. I'm greeted by someone who's obviously with Beniti. Surely I know that he brought a trusted staff. As I pass through this beautiful home, out back walking by the pool, I'm wondering where Beniti is. And then, of course, there it is. I should have known. Beniti is waving to me from a boat. Well, a small yacht. This tells me that he really does want a high level of privacy. I'm happy to climb aboard, and off we go. Beniti has only his captain go with us, and we take a seat out back under a canopy away from him. We have the area to ourselves. And Beniti doesn't say much as we slowly make our way out of the canal. He talks only of his beloved Egypt. He talked of the ancient gods and how they used to worship them, and how their pharaohs and people were no different. Then he throws me a wink and tells me that the people of the world don't know all there is to know about Egyptians. And although the world feels all deserving in knowing it all, and probably think they do, that is not the case. I just respond that sometimes, to maintain integrity, it can require some secrecy, and that I respect what he is saying. When we get out and more away from it all, Beniti gets up and tells me how he found me, and what he knows of me. He tells me that he wanted me on this job because, by reputation, he knows that integrity is one of the biggest things I hold dear, and that the quality of work, the ability to be inconspicuous, and the overall tenacity that comes with all the work that I do is what made him want to find me. I will need all of those things for this job, he says. And then he gets up and walks across the deck to the edge of the boat and looks out. I get up and join him. He tells me that he also sought me out because of my ability to believe. Believing is how we get through, he says, and that believing in important things that others think are impossible or not true keeps history alive and gives us strength. And then I ask him, what is this job about? Time? People? And he replies, both. Well, in a sense, he clarifies. He asks me if I'd heard of the labyrinth, and I tell him, of course. Now, what that could possibly have to do with a job, I have no idea, but I'm even more curious now to find out. And I'm going to interrupt here just quick for my little information session that I give you guys sometimes for a story. The Egyptians, who are they? Well, they were the masters of numbers. They came up with the cubit. They blended mathematics with astronomy, and if you didn't know, that's how we got our days broken up into 24 nice little parts. They also got us the solar calendar, complete with 365 days. They came up with hieroglyphics and a form of cursive, and wrote on papyrus, which paper was new, came straight from a plant along the Nile. Point being, these people were organized, progressive, and prosperous, and they maintained as a people like that for around 3,000 years, which is an accomplishment, until they were finally conquered by others, including the Roman and Persian empires. The Egyptians are quite the story. But now, what about this labyrinth? Some of you may be familiar with this lost labyrinth of Egypt. An underground, very large maze, or colossal temple as it were, with rooms and galleries, pillars, statues and artwork, crypts, and 12 courts for 12 kings. Located about 100 kilometers south of Cairo, near the pyramid of Amenemhat III, it has 2 levels and over 3,000 rooms. For many years, it was thought to have been destroyed over time, or even just as a mere legend, never really to have existed at all. However, in 2008, any idea of it not existing was replaced with the proof that the labyrinth was there, underground, as real as can be. They could see it using ground-penetrating radar. I knew about this discovery when it happened. I knew of the theories for and against this maze before 2008. And I knew what followed its discovery, which was pretty much nothing. Soon after this breakthrough, websites and public postings were shut down. Now, you can find stories about it all, and when it was discovered and all of that, but where are the official findings? What has really happened behind the scenes since 2008? No one knows. Egypt shut it all down. And why? They didn't exactly say. This labyrinth is said to be more elaborate than even the pyramids, so say ancient authors. So this would be a huge world find. So why the secrecy? Well, let's get back to the story. Okay, so Beniti, he knew that I would have known about this maze temple, but he also knew I most likely had never heard about what he was about to tell me. And I even say to him, I absolutely know of the lost labyrinth, but what could that have to do with me? Or a rescue. He turns from the ocean and starts to walk down to this cabin area, waving me to follow. We go down there and he starts to make himself a martini, offering me one. I take water. And we settle in and sit down and he gets into it. Beniti explains that the labyrinth is in danger of invasion from 2 sources, water and man. And now I'm thinking, okay, am I here to rescue the labyrinth itself? I soon find out that answer is no. He tells me that the water will do damage to the labyrinth. This is clear. This known invader is causing decisions to be considered. Let it go, or go in and try to save it. Yes, things are happening there, but Beniti tells me that it's about more than the water. The ideal plan would be to let the labyrinth be. And why? Because it needed to be. Then I get a small history lesson myself. Well, not really a history lesson, but more of an explanation of how things have went down in Egypt with this whole thing. He goes into plenty, but for this story, I'm going to give you the points that stand out. Okay? As it has been told to us, the Egyptian tombs were built for those who had passed. Representing the life the person led, along with the body being placed inside, were also items that would prove useful to them in the afterlife, giving them access to the items they might need. And in doing all of this, there was a process. In general, the bodies were embalmed, covered in oils, wrapped in linens, covered in amulets and items for luck, put in a coffin, and then in another coffin, a sarcophagus, and then into the tomb it goes. And then the items, like I mentioned, were put together by those closest to this person, chosen for their afterlife with care. And that sounds like enough little complicated steps, but there's more. The amulets were blessed in a way with spells put on them to help activate the magical powers of protection and transportation to keep these people safe and help them travel to the afterlife. The tomb being a gateway for this travel. It is a place meant for them to come back to as well for their things. It's meant to be safe. This part of the process focuses on the deceased, helping them and cleansing the tomb of anything else. And then when it's closed and it's sealed, being left for everything to do what it does and provide what it should for all of time. The tomb becomes the sacred space for the deceased here on Earth. I'm sure you've most likely seen shows and things about the pyramids. Those are hard to miss. They are built to last forever, to protect the pharaohs, the kings, in the same way, and help them get to the afterlife. This all sounds like a great plan, but after all of that, what actually happened? Well, what happened was the people since that time discovered these tombs, those sacred places. And of course, because people want to steal and ruin things in places like this, sell what they can on black markets, keep things for themselves, and just destroy in general because they can, things end up being taken and ravaged. These people don't care about what it was supposed to be. Then you have the historians and such who take these things and put them in places like museums for their safety so they can be preserved, admired, and observed by people today. And these people do care, but they don't know all about what it is or how it works. Not all of it. The problem with even those people trying to help save history is that they have changed what was meant in history, and in that, they change the future. Once these places have been touched by man, again, by outsiders, the sacred and magical part of any of it is ruined. The gateway is destroyed. When opened, all those magical powers and spells leak out, and they simply dissolve. Beniti goes on to further explain that now, with things as they've been, uprooted, visited, ruined, and robbed, basically, these dead souls no longer have a sacred place to go. They no longer have their items. With their gateway being opened in the past, they attempt to return, but they are stopped upon arrival because now their special place has been tainted and has no power. There are no things. The blessing and spells have been let out. Maybe there are even tourists there. Either way, the place no longer has the power to accept them. They can no longer return. They are no longer welcomed. They can't enter, but they can't go back to where they came from. They made this trip. They're here. But they're stuck, so what do? They go to a common place, a place yet to be invaded by man after its creation. And that place, Beniti tells me, would be the labyrinth. And so now I'm taking all this in, and I'm putting things together, as I'm sure you are. Beniti is asking me, on behalf of the Egyptian people, to set the spirits free. They cannot return on their own. If something isn't done, those souls will be lost to roam the labyrinth forever. They are still seen as leaders and pharaohs and people of purpose. The Egyptians take their history very seriously, and this cannot be. These once people deserve the same respect as when they were alive, if not more. Their return is seen as a blessing to the people, but now they are trapped. So here's our situation. If the labyrinth continues to flood, it will be completely destroyed. There will be no way to even get to them or help them. If the Egyptologists continue to watch the rise in water, the concern will also rise, and eventually they could win over the right to entry. If that happens, yes, the labyrinth could be saved in its current state, but it will no longer be sacred. The labyrinth was only meant for Egyptians. It was meant for people to be taken in, guided. You couldn't just walk in. Just like the tombs and pyramids, they were not meant for invasion. It changes things. It changes everything. Upon the explorer's arrival and all the excavating, all powers would disappear. The lost souls again would be stuck. Sure, they would have the chambers and courts to roam within the labyrinth, but they would have nowhere to go, really. They would never finish their journey or go on to do anything else. Maybe haunt visitors. Egyptians believe that those who have passed still have purpose, and they still contribute to the Egyptians of today. In their current state, though, they are helpless. Beniti explains to me that this is the reason why they stopped all the publications of the labyrinth in the first place. They did their own type of on-the-ground radar exploration and discovered the energies of these souls. They don't share all their secrets with the world, and that is meant to protect certain things to keep them who they are. They know without question these souls are there and that they have nowhere to go. How many there are in total? That's harder to determine, but the energy is strong and it's imperative that these souls are released. We go over some of the details about the labyrinth, what is expected with the water damage so far, and what the souls might be doing and how they might react to our arrival. He tells me that unfortunately for us, if I take this job, we are not Egyptian. We are not part of anything sacred having to do with the labyrinth, and we will be seen as invaders. He regrets he cannot tell me exactly how they will react or what they will do, but he tells me that I should expect them to defend themselves. It's getting dark now. Beniti grabs a small tray from the refrigerator and we get back up on the deck where the lights are now on and we sit down. He opens the tray of different snacks. And as we eat, we continue to discuss the options and his needs. The captain has turned the boat around now, so we're heading back to the canal at this point. This is a job where we would be walking into the unknown. We cannot know everything to expect here. Back inside the house where Beniti is staying, he takes me to a small sort of sitting room where he connects with some other partners of his from his organization in Egypt. It's now 8 p.m. for us, 5 a.m. in Egypt. For the guys meeting us, they're up early because this is important. They tell me about the water levels that they know of. They tell me to follow their directions in order to not get lost in the maze, explaining that without a guide, there would be no way to find your way out. That's what it's meant to do. Reiterating that it was never meant for people just to wander into or visit without being on the inside, without being one of them and being accepted by a guide to enter. And as always with this labyrinth, they have not been there and can't tell me anything exact. Like Beniti, these partners also tell me to expect retaliation, both from the labyrinth itself and the souls that are stuck there. Even though we are there to do something good, there's no way for us to communicate with this maze or the souls inside of it. We'll have to fight to accomplish their release. They explain the types of powers the labyrinth itself has. And again, this information comes from what Egypt has passed down among themselves. It's a very powerful place, and I can see why it's not meant for visitors. However, when they first start talking about it, I'm a little confused, and I have to ask that just upon entry for us to go in, won't all the powers be released? They explained to me that should the labyrinth be excavated for normal entry, then yes, any powers and spells and such would be released and dissolve. But because it is still buried like it is, everything has remained the same, they expect all the energy of the place to be as it was meant to be, and they have set things up so that it will remain sealed, even upon our entry. Then Beniti gets into the soldiers. Back in ancient times, there were certain loyal Egyptians who committed their service to their kings and the people, and they agreed to be committed in both life and death. Their souls are planted inside certain statues, said to be in the labyrinth. How many? No one can be sure. What statues? No one knows. But we should get ready to fight them as well. They were placed there dormant, ready to be awakened if need be. And they go on to give me more helpful tidbits like this, of things to expect, like the huge fact that the maze was meant to move. Should someone go into this maze and get lost, take a wrong direction, take a path that leads nowhere, end up walking in circles? The labyrinth itself becomes aware of that, and it will change its paths so that even if you try to get out, even if, say, you laid breadcrumbs, for example, you would never be able to find your way out. That's its point. They see you as an invader. Since the labyrinth would now realize you are not one of them, they would change the walls and the paths. Therefore, even if you did lay your breadcrumbs, that path would end and be lost. So basically, this job is that we would be going in to help rescue souls that could and would most likely try to hurt us, in a place that could try to confuse us and keep us, not to mention the water damage we need to be aware of so that we don't get stuck in any of that and or open up more flooding, all for the good of the Egyptians. And why is this so important, and why should I take this job? Well, this I know. Many great historians would say that the Egyptians helped lay the groundwork for all mankind, that they represent each and every one of us, that they hold certain things close to them for a reason. It keeps a certain sense of balance across the world. That's not to say all Egyptians are saints and always do the right thing, but if we can save that piece of what is important, there's an obligation to do so. I tell Beniti that I will take the job, and he is very glad to hear this. And why is the pandemic relevant here? I mentioned that earlier. Well, that is because there can't be any tourists and things going on right now. They're under lockdown too. Egypt with the pyramids and attractions, Cairo, all of that, will never be as quiet as it is now. And it's good timing with the pressure of explorers and the urgent call to save the labyrinth from the water. When the pandemic lifts, this will all start up again. Beniti is clear. They have waited for the right time. And that time is now. And that means it's time for me to get my team and get organized. I needed the whole team on this trip. Two of my team members will have to stay out of the labyrinth in case there are major emergencies. I want plenty of power on the outside to help take care of things. I know before I go that I will be taking Scarlett, who has her history and archaeology background and was a curator, and then I'm taking Jagger and Frankie also into the labyrinth. That leaves Harley and Ryder to stay behind. They will be in contact with me and the guys on the inside, as well as Beniti. If you haven't been or don't know a lot about Cairo, it's the capital of Egypt, and it's one of the largest cities in Africa. It's been around for over 1,000 years. It's home to those famous Giza pyramids I'm sure you heard of, probably the most popular of all the pyramids to see. The pyramids in Egypt were built some 2,000 years BC, and if you didn't know, they were only built for a couple of centuries, and nobody knows why they stopped building them. The Egyptians back then believed in gods and goddesses, and like how they built these pyramids for their pharaohs, they built temples, and they believed that they were home to their gods and goddesses, of which they had many. There's a lot of old in Cairo. The city actually grew and expanded extremely quickly. It's pretty much packed now. Lots of people, lots of tourism. Not when we were there. But it's usually hustling and bustling. The streets are always busy, there's a ton of restaurants and things, and they have some of the best spices and coffee you'll ever find. Had to throw that in. When we arrive, we're not there to sightsee or take part in the city. We were only there for the job. So when we arrive in Cairo, we're met by a transport van. We brought a lot with us, and there are a lot of us, but Beniti was prepared for this. We load up and we head to his estate. Once there, he has a large spread of food for us set on this big table on his back patio. There are three other men with him. These men will accompany us on our journey down to the labyrinth and help with some of the setup. We all take part in casual but extremely important conversation while we eat. Beniti met all the team members, which we wanted him to see all of us and who would be on the ground doing this, and we had a lot to discuss. We went over the dangers of the labyrinth again, now with the team and all the other details. When we're done eating and going over things, we move on to the supplies. He provides each of us with the map. And let me just get this out here. The scans that are public and what the researchers got were good, but they weren't exactly correct on this thing. It's very perplex. The maps he gives us are waterproof and flexible. He wants us to carry one with us at all times, each of us. Remember, if the energies of the labyrinth sense that we are lost, it will determine that we don't belong and things could move. We need a map that we can use under any condition, including water. Should the maze move, and let's hope that it doesn't, it could open areas and let water in, so we need to be ready. If it moves too much, our map's not really going to help us much, but it could still be a guide. Along with the map, we will have what we brought, and to transport our supplies and us, Beniti is supplying us a type of home base. It's not exactly a motorhome, it's not really a truck, but it has bunks, it's stocked with food, it has the storage we need for what we need to bring. So we load up our home base, and when all of that is done, we're actually ready to go, but we don't go anywhere. Since this isn't exactly a have-to-do-right-right-this-second job, because we know it's going to be quiet like this for a little while yet, we take the night to get some good rest. I mean, who knows what all is waiting for us? How long will it take us? And after all the travel issues we went through just to get there, that's exactly what we need. Rest. The next morning, we fuel up, and we're out of there pretty quick. We're headed about 100 kilometers south of Cairo and about 30 kilometers in from the Nile to that Amenemhat III pyramid, otherwise known as the Hawara pyramid. At the base of that, buried, is the labyrinth we're looking for. It's down a desert road we go with our three Beniti cohorts following us. It takes us about 2 hours to get where we're going. We have computers, cameras, breathing equipment, defensive supplies, all kinds of things. We are stocked and ready. When we get there, we need to get everything set up before we really go in and do anything. This includes laying out what each of us will need, making sure we are plugged in communication-wise with Harley and Ryder. With everything set, we all sit down and review our maps. We have already looked at the information with Beniti, but we have to know where we are when we go in, how we go in, and how we want to move about on the inside. With that done, it's time to gear up. The get-ups we have are important. They're all black. They're made of this custom-made, rip-resistant, water-resistant, fire-resistant, you name it, material to safeguard us under any condition. I'm not even sure what you'd call this particular material, but it was made just for us. It's kind of like leather, but not. It's very sturdy, yet light for mobility. We could be crawling through rocks. We could get hit by something. We could end up in water. So what we have on does count. It matters. In addition, we're bringing crystals, stun guns, steel rods, and just a bunch of stuff. With us, Jagger, Frankie, Scarlett, myself, and all our things ready to go, we now need to get to the entrance of this place. We will need to keep the labyrinth sealed, and Beniti was prepared for that. About 8 meters out from where the actual entrance is to the labyrinth, underground of course, there's a very large stone. And under that stone, there's a large hole, which was revealed when the Beniti guys used their equipment and slid this big stone over. His team actually tunneled down and then they tunneled over towards the labyrinth entrance. They didn't go all the way though. Therefore, it is still sealed. We can't have what is on the inside mixing with what is on the outside, or this underground wonder would be tainted. So we will be lowered down into the hole. We will then be sealed in. Beniti's guys will put that large stone back over the hole. Once in, we will get to work and tunnel the remaining foot or two over to the labyrinth. We go in and we put another stone in behind us in that little entrance, and that gets us in, but none of the good stuff out. Once we're closed in, and just remember, there are no lights or anything down there. We're armed with our headlamps and flashlights. We have all kinds of lights. But without those, it would be pitch black. Nothing, no light coming in, nothing getting out. And something important to note here, and don't think it wasn't on all of our minds, is that if we have some sort of emergency here, say we find ourselves running, even if the team knew we were in trouble, it's not like they can just kick that huge stone off to the side and get us out. If something's after us and catches up to us in that opening, we're sitting ducks. Now, before I get to all the lovely things that happened to us once we got in, let me go over one more time our ultimate mission. I've said it, to help set the souls free. But how do we do this and what exactly is our role in it all? Well, part of what Beniti went over with me and what we went over after our dinner with everyone was these little metal spirit boxes. Well, they're not exactly little. They're small-ish golden boxes, and we're each given three. We are to capture the souls with these boxes. Each box, we're told, can hold many souls. They weren't even sure how many souls have made their way into the labyrinth over the years. But we know that there were many buried in tombs in Egypt, and we have discovered and opened many of those, legally and illegally. That said, Beniti tells us that according to his energy readings, we have plenty. And we don't have any reason to question him. The sad truth, he explains, about, you know, all these those buried in tombs over the years, is that some of those souls would not and did not have what it took to survive travel. Things like the energies put into their tombs, and ultimately with them, those things helped with a soul's send-off, if you will. And how all of that was packaged up would partly determine their full abilities to get out and to come back. So unfortunately, the more wealthy, the ones with more resources, those of pharaohs, for instance, would have had much more of an ability to actually make it back. Even though at that time, all those years ago, everyone believed that everyone would make it back should they need to. And that's the other thing. Some of them wouldn't need to come back. Also, smaller, less elaborate tombs simply didn't withstand time. They were worn and brought down to piles of rubble by the time any of us would have gotten there. Us being people. My point is that you'd think there might, you know, be a ton of lost souls in there, but that's just not the case. There's quite a few, but not everyone. The whole tomb situation would have had to have been near perfect for everything to work out right. They didn't know that then, but they know that now. But okay, so that is the goal, and that's how we're going to do it. Capture these guys and bring them out safely in these boxes, and then we hand them over to Beniti for release. Something to be celebrated. Now back to the Labyrinth Maze Temple. We finally break through and hit the entrance. And remember, we're talking 3,000 rooms in this thing. Thousands of halls and chambers. You can bet that we immediately break out our maps again. The entrance is partly flooded, but we can get through that. It's all water coming in by way of the ground, by the way, so it's not flowing in super fast or anything. So far, it's just what we expected. On the inside, we find ourselves looking out at these large pillars. And I take a few pictures of those. They're pretty extraordinary. And just so you know, I'll be taking random pictures throughout this little journey in this labyrinth, but I'm not really there to be a photographer, so I don't spend a lot of time doing that, but I do hit the big spots for Beniti. Anyway, we're in this large hall of giant pillars, and we can't help ourselves. You know, we walk up to a few of them, admiring the detailed artwork that is still visible on them. And I'd say we were on the inside doing that for about 3 minutes, and then we start to see crocodiles coming out from behind some of these pillars. And now we're all looking at each other because how can that be? There can't be anything alive in here. It's been sealed up for centuries. Frankie and I slowly move towards one of them, Jagger and Scarlet behind us, ready to get on it if anything happens. Jagger has his stun gun out and Scarlet has her pistol out, just in case. Then we notice these crocs are moving but not making any sound. We're shaking our heads because there they are, but they can't be. Then one croc actually turns to look at us, and when he does, he starts to fade. We move in a little bit closer, and then he fades out altogether. Then Scarlet shouts out, "Look!" and she's pointing her pistol in the other direction. So we turn to see, and we see other crocodiles, and they're all fading out as well, one by one. Crocodiles were seen as protectors, so to us it makes sense that they would be there at the entrance. But they didn't get violent or try to hurt us. Maybe the other souls will be the same. We can only hope. Crocodiles overall meant a lot to the Egyptians, if you didn't know that. They used to honor them. To the Egyptians, they saw the crocodiles as a deity. There's even a town called Crocodopolis, not that far from where we are. They saw crocs as having powers like a pharaoh, having influence on fertility and military success. And like I just said, they were also seen as a protector. Egyptians used to mummify crocs. We were a little surprised to see crocodile spirits down there, but then again, we weren't. We know that there are 12 burial rooms and 12 courts for the kings in this labyrinth. We will work the courts first, and we will do everything we can to avoid that maze. It's meant to trick you. Again, you're not supposed to be in there without a guide. Those guides knew this place in and out. Should the courts on the upper level yield us nothing, then we will move down to the lower level, where the burial rooms are. We start our dive into this place. Both Scarlett and I pull out our EMF readers so that we are aware of any spirits around us. And where we are, we have three options. We can go forward, go left, or go right. We decide to go forward. Once we get past the Hall of Pillars, we enter into a hallway made of stone. And as we go, we see these stone columns with bowls on the top of them. That would have been where they would have had fire to light the place. There are hieroglyphs and paintings, both on the walls and on columns. As we creep through the place, you can't help but notice how quiet it is. I mean, it is really quiet because we're underground. There are zero sounds except for the sounds that we are creating. We get down that hall a bit, and then it splits off into two directions, and we go right. We're heading to the first court. And it's not like we're just going to head down the hall and catch the court on the right or something like that. These hallways are not straight. They have twists and turns to them. There are extra chambers everywhere. We have to go through three chambers and four hallways before we actually get to that first court. And during our travels, our EMF readers don't show any activity. We move on to the next and the next, and we actually get to the end of one hall, and we find ourselves looking out onto part of that large maze that, from the map, looks like it's in the center of this thing. This is the part of the labyrinth we wanted to avoid at all costs because it could trick us or trap us. We decide to mark the doorway that we are walking through so that we can just have a look. We can see there are a lot of doorways around this thing, and we don't want to get confused and go some other way. Because at that point, we kind of know where we are. And like I said, leaving breadcrumbs, you know, for a trail, for instance, would do no good in this place. We don't want anything like that. But we have another option that's going to work great. Each of us has a bag of this special sand. We brought this sand because when it's mixed with water, it expands, you can mold it, and then it hardens like clay. We brought this because we knew that there might be some slight possible flooding in the place. Should we find ourselves, say, in a room, unable to get out, and it has water coming in that would eventually flood us out, we could mix the sand with the water, using the water to our advantage, and then mold our clay and plug holes and openings, blocking any more water from coming through. Now, if the water was gushing and flowing down a hallway, the sand's not really going to help us much, but for something on a smaller scale, it would work great. We get our door marked, and then we take a minute to look around. This maze was pretty crazy. Very high walls and openings everywhere. All of it was covered with what would have been green vines back in the day, but now it was all dark and dead wood. It was huge. Frankie dipped his head into one of the openings but refused to step inside. None of us wanted to do that. But we do all enter the area and we walk around it a bit, just looking at it in amazement. It was hard to believe that this place was put together by human hands. I would describe it as marvelous, and not one of us could fathom its construction. By seeing it, we now know that it's not a perfect square either, like the diagrams show. Parts of it in different areas stick out in spots, like it's reaching for a hallway or it's touching a chamber, so you can't actually walk the perimeter of it. We do know, though, that all around the perimeter, there are many doorways leading to many different places. Things had been going pretty good for us up until that point. We're pretty happy. We're checking out the maze. Suddenly, though, we start to hear this creaking sound. It sounds loud and heavy. And we kind of freeze. We just stay put. The ground is rumbling under our feet. And when that stops, we decide it's time to leave that maze area. And that, my friends, concludes part one of The Labyrinth. Click into the link below to find out what happens as we continue this major rescue mission unlike any other. And as always, stay involved in what you can, do what you can, always explore and expand your mind, and keep dreaming. Thank you for listening, and until next time, and I will talk to you all soon.